This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency. Your Israeli property is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I don't know if you guys have had a chance yet to listen into Israel's new song for this year's
Eurovision. Yes, we certainly have.
Revealed yesterday with great flourish. So you've had a chance to have a listen of it, and I'm guessing that everybody's voiced their opinions. Obviously a bit of a ballad this time around, choir tune, and of course people have already done the analysis to see how that's going to fit in with the competition. We are told that many of the songs, if not most of the songs this year, are more upbeat, and so this is a ballad which potentially will stick out, will be a little bit more unique in the competition and potentially give it a better chance of winning, although I'm not sure that winning the Eurovision is necessarily such an accolade, given the types of songs that go there. But there is another kind of deeper discussion that's going on, which is, does the song that we send to the Eurovision necessarily need to reflect the national emotion at that moment? I mean, Hurricane last year certainly did. And it was felt that we needed somehow to use that opportunity to let out our national emotion and our national feeling at that moment. And actually, some people are saying, rather than New Day Will Rise, at the moment, we're still kind of feeling a little bit like Hurricane. We should send Hurricane again, if that's what we want to do, because we're not quite yet at the moment of New Day Will Rise. But other countries kind of just sang a song for entertainment purposes, without necessarily having one that represents the country in an emotional sort of way. I don't know what listeners think about this. What do you guys think? Do we need to, maybe now, because of what we've been through, it's important that we somehow reflect that. And of course, Yuval Rafael, who will sing the song at the Eurovision in three languages, has her own story to tell about surviving the Nova Music Festival and being in one of those bomb shelters and somehow managing to come out alive. So she is an eyewitness to the October the 7th massacre and one of the survivors who's come out to be able to tell her story and to present herself on the national stage. So do we really need this to reflect our national emotion? Is that what we need right now?
I'd love to hear from you. 061-895-1019. My answer to that is more of a question, Anthony. How can we not?
Perhaps so, yeah. Maybe that's really the answer. And does this really reflect our national emotion? Because I think we're trying to put an optimistic sort of veneer on things when a lot of people feel like we're not quite at the moment yet when we can feel optimistic. We're still going through far too much pain. And to be honest, when I saw the picture of Emily Damari and Romy Gonen at Hostage Square, two girls who were released from Gaza after 471 days in captivity, and each of them with bandages on one on her leg and one on her arm after having been through surgery to repair injuries that they sustained during their kidnapping on October the 7th. They were both shot, and then, of course, it wasn't healed and wasn't treated during 471 days in Gaza. And the two girls reunited at Hostage Square, one sitting in a wheelchair with her leg bandaged up, one with her hand bandaged up, but free in Hostage Square, having been through amazing treatment given by Israeli medical facilities. And when we see that and we remember the 24 people that we believe who are still alive in Gaza, and those who are not alive, whose bodies need to be returned back. I'm not sure yet that we are ready to say a new day will rise. It will, but maybe not quite yet.
Yeah, you know, listening to the song, I'm not sure that it says a new day will rise as anything other than a plea. To me, that's what it seemed. It seemed to me to be a prayer that a new day will rise, a plea that it will, and the deep belief that it will, but not that a new day has arisen, which I do think is somewhat different to saying it will rise. Let's just talk about some of the latest news. Israel is sending its negotiating team back to Doha in Qatar. That's today to pick up negotiations for the release of the remaining hostages. Do we expect anything to come from this?
I think that this is more of hope rather than of sincere belief that something's going to come of this. As I mentioned earlier, we believe that we have 59 hostages all in all still remaining in Gaza. We believe that 24 of them are still alive. We have their names. We know who they are. Most of them young men, a mix of people who were kidnapped from military bases, who were kidnapped from their homes on the kibbutzim near to Gaza, and who were kidnapped from the Nova Music Festival. That's the mix of people who still remain held hostage against their will and for no good reason. Being held in Gaza, and we already have heard such harrowing accounts of the experiences that those hostages have been released had to endure during their time in Gaza, that we can understand that our hostages in Gaza are suffering, and every day is a critical day for them. And the sooner we can bring them home, the better it will be for everybody concerned, and the more likely it is that they might survive, because every day that goes by reduces the chances of survival. So the Prime Minister did announce over the weekend that he's sending a negotiating team to Doha today to pick up negotiations. We understand that the US representatives will also be there. Steve Witkoff from the US administration is due to arrive from Saudi Arabia into Qatar also during the course of this week. The Egyptians and, of course, the Qataris are involved. We don't really know what to expect, because there's such a mix of things going on and so many disagreements. There's been a huge furor over the U.S. involvement, direct involvement with Hamas. The U.S. administration has tried to somehow backtrack, because reports suggested that the U.S. administration was negotiating only for the release of U.S. citizens who are being held in Gaza. And that went down very, very badly in Israeli society. And it was felt that the U.S. administration are kind of getting directly involved in a place that they shouldn't be. And how dare they negotiate for the release of only some of our hostages and finger who they are because they happen to be U.S. citizens. And what about the remaining hostages, and what concessions will be given up to Hamas by the U.S. in order to secure the release of those U.S. hostages? So the U.S. representative, who is apparently was the person involved in these negotiations, has backtracked and said no. He wasn't only negotiating for U.S. citizens, and that he, in fact, was fully coordinated with the Israeli government on these discussions directly with Hamas. And a lot of the things that were being directed at the U.S. on this particular front were pulled back and were withdrawn. But in the meantime, it's noticeable that Israel is trying to put as much pressure on Hamas as possible. So, for example, we already discussed last week that Israel has stopped the flow of goods into Gaza. The aid trucks that were lined up on the Gazan border to bring aid into Gaza, all of that has now stopped. Israel has also switched off the electricity supply to Gaza in order to try and to put a little bit more pressure on Hamas and to try and reflect Hamas in a negative light, particularly amongst citizens who obviously will suffer some hardship. Having said all of that, there is no sign of starvation in Gaza. So this notion that because Israel has cut off the supply chain means that people begin to starve is really misleading in every possible respect, because the estimation is that there is enough food in Gaza for some months. So much food was, in fact, shipped in, was trucked into Gaza over the last little while, that there is a number of months' worth of supply of food that will still be available in Gaza and that there's no possible sign of starvation. And I don't think that Israel would allow a situation of starvation to occur. Having said all of that, Israel is trying every possible way to put pressure on Hamas to somehow release our hostages. It's unclear whether the negotiations that we're talking about now are an attempt to somehow extend phase one and to continue the process of releasing hostages in exchange for the release of prisoners while the ceasefire continues, or whether there is a desire to move into stage two. And as I've mentioned a few times, stage two has a number of very controversial elements to it, the one of which is the end of the war, the complete end of the war, as well as the removal of Hamas from power in Gaza, in addition to the release of all Israeli hostages. That's phase two. So it has quite a number of controversial and difficult to achieve objectives within phase two. And I think that for now, the easiest route and the quickest way to any success is somehow to try to keep phase one rolling and just to continue the process of releasing those hostages. What I think is noticeable through all of this is that Israel has not returned in any meaningful way back to operating the IDF in Gaza. So the ceasefire that was put in place holds for now, even though there have been reports of IDF activities and drones and explosions and people killed, and there have been certain quite specific incidents that have occurred where the IDF continues to marshal and keep a track of events in Gaza, to the extent that people are planning operations or that IDF soldiers around the Gaza area might be endangered by actions which are being taken by terrorists who still operate in Gaza. There have been a number of activities, operations mounted to kill people, to take people out, to destroy armaments, to destroy launching facilities of rockets potentially that could come from Gaza. So there's been still quite a lot of surveillance going on in the Gaza area in order to make sure that none of that flares back up again. But the ceasefire still holds today, even though the army is making preparations to return back to operations in Gaza. Major preparations are being made. And so I think all options still remain on the table, but we certainly hope that somehow, miraculously, these talks will somehow yield the release of some further hostages from Gaza.
Let's hope that they do. A new IDF spokesperson has been appointed by new General Staff Eyal Zamir. What's the significance of this appointment?
So this has been a very, very controversial moment in the new IDF Chief of General Staff's term of office. He's only just taken office during the course of last week. And immediately he has removed Daniel Hagari, who has become a very familiar face and voice to many of us. He has really been the face of the war over the last year and a half and given many of the reports. And I think we've grown to love and trust and respect Brigadier General Daniel Hagari, who was the IDF spokesperson during the war. And now he's been removed. And of course, there's a lot of questions about why he was removed. I think that is very natural for us to expect with a new Chief of General Staff that he will populate key positions within the army with people who he knows and loves and trusts. And that is certainly the case for Brigadier General Effie Defrin, who is now the new IDF chief spokesperson. He has a very illustrious career and a very impressive CV in terms of having served as well in the United States. He's been a warrior in the IDF, and he and the Chief of General Staff, Eyal Zamir, go back many, many years to when they were commanders in the tank battalion. Wow. So they know each other from having worked together and served together in the armored corps. And then Effie Defrin went on to serve in a number of diplomatic positions as well in the US and in Israel. And so he seems imminently qualified to take over the position of chief spokesman for the IDF, and I hope that we will all be able to give him a chance to prove himself. I think that he has every quality that is needed to do the job, and of course he's a very close associate of the new chief of general staff. The problem with Daniel Haggari is that he was associated with releasing some information in relation to a certain case that's going on about the leak of information from the prime minister's office. And as a result of that, we understand that he's fallen out of favor with a number of the politicians in the government and members of the government, including the prime minister himself. And many are speculating that this is what lies behind him having been fired from his position. There may well be some truth to that, I'm not sure, but I think in general that a new leader will bring his own team, and I think that we need to respect that.
And a fresh perspective. I don't want to not discuss this because I think it's important. More than 1,000 Alawites are reported to have been massacred in Syria over the weekend. What is known?
Well, the initial stories that we received were that the Alawite minority, who we need to remember are supporters of the former President Assad. The Assad family are Alawites, and they are the family that have ruled over Syria for many decades now. But they come from a minority family on the western coast of Syria. And we understand that supporters of the Assad family, of the Alawite community, rose up to try somehow to take things into their own hands in their local vicinity against the current Syrian government. And as a result of that, more than 1,000 Alawites have been killed. There are pictures showing Alawites trying to escape to Russian bases in Syria to try to protect their lives as the Syrian army forces effectively went on the rampage, killing these Alawites. So a massive massacre of Alawites over the weekend, and many other minorities in Syria fearing for their lives, including the Druze, which are very much supported by Israel. And in fact, the Israeli government yesterday announced that they will allow Syrian Druze to come and work in the Golan area in Israel. They will allow that, and the Israeli government has already ordered the protection of the Druze, even those living in Syria, by the IDF. We also have the Kurdish minority who are being opposed by Turkey. So many different people and groups getting involved here, minority groups. The issue is that the new Syrian government comes from a background of ISIS, and somehow you can't remove that from their operations. So even though Julani, who's now the new Syrian president, seems to have been somehow laundered and made to look whiter than white with his new suit on and everything else, the fact of the matter is that he still has this very strong Islamic ISIS background, and that somehow is still inherent in him and the forces that he commands.
That is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property, is in good hands.